How will AI transform the world by the year 2084? That's the topic today on Mind Matters News.
Welcome to Mind Matters News, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. In 1984, George Orwell forecast a dystopian future under communism. His classic book was titled 1984. Many of Orwell's predictions about communism were proven. So what will be the effects of AI a century later in the year 2084? Replacing George Orwell is Dr. John Lennox, who has written the book 2084, Artificial Intelligence and the Future of Humanity. How will AI, not communism, affect the future? Dr. Lennox is able to look at the AI phenomena from a number of different perspectives. From the technical side, he is an emeritus professor of mathematics at Oxford University. On the theoretical side, he is a pastoral advisor of Green Templeton College at Oxford University. Dr. Lennox, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be on your program.
That's wonderful. This is the second time we've talked, and your first interview had a lot of traffic, so it's really great to talk to you again. You have written a book entitled 2084, Artificial Intelligence and the Future of Humanity. The first obvious question to ask is, why did you write this book?
Well, there's a sense in which I have been interested in futuristic scenarios for a long time. I'm not a sci-fi addict, but I was deeply impressed by C.S. Lewis's sci-fi trilogy. And he raises the question in the third of those books, That Hideous Strength. He imagines scientists trying to increase their power by preserving a human brain. And as I read that book and saw the issues it raised, it put into my mind the idea that it might be important to think through this stuff as it develops, as it has. But the immediate reason for writing it was that I was asked to give a lecture on the topic in connection with the book of Genesis. And I said, look, I think you've come to the wrong person. And they said, no. Well, we think you're the person to do this. Well, I decided in the end to do it because it initially had to do with artificial intelligence and the nature of humanity. As I started reading, background reading of various people, I discovered that a lot had been said, a lot had been written, but there was a real need, in my view, of evaluating it. And so it has ended up with this book.
I see. Wait, could you give us a quick overview, a thumbnail sketch of what the book is about?
Well, the book really has several purposes. I want to demystify the good side of AI so that people, particularly Christians, but not only, are not afraid of it. And secondly, I want to take some of the hype out of the science fiction side, artificial general intelligence. So we need to distinguish between those two things. That's very important. And then discuss, for both kinds of artificial intelligence, the ethical and philosophical and indeed theological questions that are raised by them.
Very good. You know, in talking about AI duplicating humans, duplicating us, it seems important to ask the question, what does it mean to be human? So we're looking at AI possibly duplicating humans. I don't believe that'll ever happen. But what do you think? Do you think that AI will ever have the capability of duplicating a human?
Well, I doubt it like you, because I think this is where we need to make the distinctions very clearly. Narrow artificial intelligence tends to do one thing superbly well that normally takes human intelligence to do. But the machinery, and it consists of a computer with the capacity to dig into a large database and recognize patterns there. that's impressive, and there are wonderful examples, particularly in medicine, of it working very efficiently. But the second kind of artificial intelligence, AGI, artificial general intelligence, is really the quest for a superintelligence of one of two kinds, either enhancing human beings as they exist and building a biological superintelligence, or else discovering ways of uploading or downloading the contents, say, of the human mind onto silicon, so that we remove the dependence on an organic substrate. And there, it seems to me that the likelihood of building a superintelligence that exceeds human capacity in every direction is very slim, because human intelligence is conscious, and we don't know what consciousness is. No scientist knows what consciousness is. And that, the most serious people recognize that that is a huge barrier. How can you build a conscious being when you don't even know what consciousness is?
Yes, I think there's different theories of consciousness. One is called panpsychism, I believe, which is the idea that since you can't explain it, it must be a property of the universe, and that everything has a degree of consciousness. For example, a refrigerator, just because it has mass, it has energy, but it also has a consciousness associated with it. Do you have any thoughts on that and panpsychism?
A very few serious thoughts on that, because it seems to me to be a misuse of the word consciousness. Once everything is conscious, the word loses its meaning. A refrigerator is not aware of itself. We are. And there seems to be a vast difference between the two. And I suspect there's very little mileage in eroding the concept so that everything can be said of consciousness, and so that one can say, well, there's no mystery. Of course, some philosophers, I think Daniel Dennett may be one, just deals with the question by supposing it doesn't exist.
I tell people I know I'm conscious. I'm not really sure about you. It's a hard thing to communicate. It's a hard thing to define, as you said. I don't believe artificial general intelligence will ever be developed. But if indeed I'm wrong, should AGI be given rights? You talk about this in the book a little bit, and I thought about it, and it turns out that there are non-human entities that are given rights, such as corporations. They're treated as a non-human entity. Do you believe that artificial general intelligence will ever mature to the point where it's given rights, like a freedom of speech or whatever?
Well, again, I think consciousness is the big barrier. What do rights mean given to an entity that does not appear to be in itself a moral entity? Now, why I put it that way is the fact that even narrow AI, for example, we are involved these days in very rapidly developing self-driving vehicles controlled by artificial intelligence. And the programming of such vehicles raises all kinds of ethical questions. For example, if an artificially intelligent self-driving car is coming down a road and its sensors pick up an old man crossing the street, and on the other side there's a line of children waiting for a bus, and it's going to hit one of the two, how does it decide between them? There are huge ethical questions. And the problem is that the machine itself is amoral, so that the ethics that's built into it have got to be the ethics of the programmers. And therefore, we have to inquire, what right have they, and on what principles will they function? And that's a concern to many people who are working at the higher levels of implementing AI in great corporations and so on. What ethical principles are we going to go by? Because one thing is very clear to everybody: the technology is outpacing the ethics by a very large factor.
Interesting. I agree with you, by the way, that ethics is never the responsibility of the artificial intelligence. It belongs to the whoever did the programming and who was ever the end user of it. You also mentioned self-driving cars. I think that there we have a case of the failure of a type of general artificial intelligence that has failed to deliver what it was promised to deliver. And, you know, if you can't do self-driving cars, people and corporations are abandoning the research into self-driving cars. How can we ever have an artificial general intelligence? It's going to be an interesting thing to watch. You know, as all these things happen, John, technology is changing everything. I had withdrawal symptoms a couple weeks ago when I was separated from my cell phone. You rely on these things. So in what sense do you think AI technology will change what it means to be human?
Well, it is going to do certain things. It's already doing them. One very important example of that is the change in the job structure in society. Because as more and more processes get automated, and they reckon in the United States, I think within 20 or so years, at least 30% of current jobs will fall under artificial intelligence and therefore will no longer exist for human beings. It's going to create a huge problem of re-employing such people because employment will increasingly depend on advanced knowledge of technology, and not everybody's got that. Now, I'm speaking of a highly developed nation like the USA. I was recently in South Africa, and they were saying that AI is creating a huge problem because when people lose their jobs there, there isn't the educational infrastructure to educate them to take over these new technological positions. So that's creating a problem. And the thinking members of the community are asking questions about what does it mean to have a large proportion of your culture unemployed? Because from a biblical point of view, and I think this is very important, because psychology confirms this, that jobs mean a great deal to people. They supply part of the meaning of their lives. And if you deprive them of jobs, recent research has shown it can lead to all kinds of pretty serious psychological problems. So we've got to think that through. And you can repeat this in all kinds of other spheres, but that's one example.
Very interesting. You know, it's been said that AI is the new electricity. It's neither good nor bad. You've addressed some of the potential negative uses of artificial intelligence or the negative impacts of artificial intelligence. But expanding on that, what are some of the big threats that you see in the use of AI technology in the near future?
Well, the threats are best explained by comparing them with the advantages. So let's take a very simple and practical example, which is extremely useful, and that is in the field of X-ray technology. Let's imagine that we construct a database of 1 million X-rays of people's lungs, and we get the best medical experts in the world to label the diseases on those images. That becomes a big database for a computer AI system. And then you or I, we get problems with our breathing. An X-ray is taken, and in a few seconds, it's compared with the 1 million pictures in the database, and out comes the diagnosis. Now, we're already at the stage where such diagnoses tend, on average, to be quite a bit better than you would get in your local hospital. So there's a positive thing. Now let's go down the scale and think of the AI associated with our smartphones. We buy a book, and a few days later, up pops a little message that says people that bought that book also were interested in this book, and your attention is drawn to buying the second book. Well, that can be very useful, or it can be very irritating. But what many people do not realize is that that system is actually harvesting a great deal of information about us, about where we go, who we meet, what our buying preferences are, and it's being sold on to third parties without our permission. So this is what is in a way called surveillance capitalism. And Shuzhana Zuboff, who's an emeritus professor at MIT, has written quite a chilling book about this as being very dangerous for society. This theft of our property, our data property, without our permission. And the problem is that we willingly wear these trackers, and we're sacrificing, in a sense, quite a lot of our privacy in order to gain these alleged advantages. And whether they are advantages or not is something that we need to seriously think about before we're engulfed by it.
One of the big negatives about artificial intelligence, you also mentioned in your book, was the use of facial recognition, especially currently about China. And what I found really interesting is that there's an intersection here between your book and Orwell's book, with the face recognition and all of these things happening with our loss of privacy. We are living in an age of Big Brother. And I think that they have a long way to go. I share my Amazon.com account with my daughter, who also orders off of my account. And they haven't figured out I don't need ads for baby diapers yet. So they have yet to differentiate between my use and other people's use. So it's far from perfect. So Dr. Lennox, thank you. This has been a lot of fun. We've been talking to Dr. Lennox, and his new book is entitled 2084, Artificial Intelligence and the Future of Humanity. We're going to provide on the podcast notes a link to his website. And Dr. Lennox, if I remember, the site is really simple. What is the site for your book?
Yes, it's 2084book.com.
2084book.com. Please visit there. There's a very nice video that tells a little bit about the book, and you can also order it there. And I'm sure, like everything else in the world, it's available on Amazon.com.
Yes, it is.
Excellent. Excellent. Do you know if it's out in audio yet? I'm a big audio fan.
I think it may well be. And of course, there's lots more stuff on my own website, johnlennox.org. But I'm fairly sure it's on Audible and it's on Kindle. I know that.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. And yeah, if you do go to Amazon.com, I encourage you to look at some of Dr. Lennox's other books, which are also excellent. I recommend the book. I've read it, and it's a very easy, but it's a very deep read, and I think you'll enjoy it. So until next time, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.